welcome you to another Teague Bible Church podcast with Pastor, Teacher, Jim Petty. May the Spirit of God minister to you through the message from the Word of God.
All right, to start off with this morning, we need to... I was going to have a little contest, but I can't quite exactly... Let's do it. Let's split it right here. So, Carolyn and Brandy, you're with these guys. You are Team 1, and this is Team 2 over here. And we'll just keep a little count. I want you to tell me all the songs that you know. I'll give one side a chance, give you a few seconds, give the other side a chance. All the songs you know that had to relate to time. Okay? You can tell me the band. You can tell me the name of the song. You can hum the song. I don't care. Any song you can think of, country, western, rock and roll, whatever, where it relates to time. So let's start with this little group over here. Give me a song that is related to time. Time After Time, Cyndi Lauper. Right. Yeah. Wait a minute. Now, one at a time. There's, you got 1 point. Over here, now this side. Give me a song. Give me a song. Now it's your turn. Give me a song related to time. Time in a Bottle, Jim Croce. All right. Hold it. This side now. Say it again. How's it go? Oh, two every day, turn, turn. That's the birds or the yard birds, right? Yard birds. The birds. Yeah, and that's out of the book of Ecclesiastes. Right. All right. One and one. Here we go. Now, this side over here, another song related to time. Give it to me. What? I think you're making it up. What's the band? All right. Will y'all buy that? I think he's just making it up. I don't know. All right. Now, this side, your chance. What do you got? What do you got? All right. Two and two. Two and two. Over here, your turn. Three over here? How do you figure? I think it's two up. It's three up. Three or two. Your turn. 25 or 6 to 4 by Chicago. The guy wrote that on a napkin in the middle of the night because it was 25 or 26 minutes to 4 in the morning. I used to listen to that song and sing it. I'm a drummer, so I played that. I watched him in concert and everything else, and I'd go, oh, that's such a good song. Then I realized how shallow that was. They made millions of dollars on that song. Your turn, right? What do we got? There you go. All right. Over here. Somebody keep it. Or Terry, you keep a score. You get the math man here. This side, where you at? Dum, 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 dum. All right, you had enough time. This is a chance to jump ahead. This is not your turn yet, dear. Can you what? If it's a song, is it a song? Okay. All right. It's right here. So you got a few more seconds. Got nothing here. Okay. Can anybody else think of another one? There's one. All right. If I Could Turn Back Time by Cher. Right. How many did that give this group? Over here. What do you got? Always and Forever. Amen. That one. Yeah. Country Western. Over here. All right. Back over here then again. What we got? Anything else more over here? That's all the songs you know about time related to time. Steve Miller Band. Time keeps on slipping, slipping. Yeah. Used to play that song. Yeah, I know that song intimately. All right. Rock of Ages. That's a stretch, but we'll give you that. All right. Over here now. Got another one? Ray, old country western sing. Who? For the Good Time. Yeah, all right. That's good. Still doing time, but you can hum it then. If you don't know it, you can. Come on. All right. Anyway, there's a lot of songs out there about time. There's a lot of movies about time. And the movies you see today, so many of them want to go back and revisit time fix something in the past, those kind of things. If you know anything about Eastern religions and about Hinduism and reincarnation, their whole solution to everything is give a person enough time to come back on this earth in whatever form, and you'll finally get it all right. Well, the scripture says no matter how much time you had in your entire life, you'll never get it all right because of the corrupting influence of sin on our life. God's the only one that can redeem us. The scripture says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, it's God's doing that you are in Christ Jesus, not your own. He's the one that provides the sacrifice. He's the one that redeems us, giving us all the time in the world and all the chances in the world and all the perfect environment in the world. We still would sin. So sin's a serious problem. Took a serious solution of Jesus having to be executed on the cross to save you and I. And so we want to talk today, and I don't know how far I want to go with this, but it'll probably take 2 weeks to do this. Take your paper home with you, look up some of the verses, and we want to talk about time management because we're starting a new year. And one of the things we regret in life, and I don't know if you've had this experience, but I've had the experience over and over and over again, to be at the hospital room holding somebody's hand and listening to them breathe that last breath. Has anybody had that experience? It's something you don't get over. It's something you don't get over. And you know, like they say, I've not seen many people on their hospital bed say, boy, I wish I had another few years to make some more money. I wish I had another few years so I could buy another new pickup truck. I've never heard that. I hear people having regrets about relationships and things they wish they would have done and prioritizing things they would have done. So in our life, everything we do is in this commodity that's given to us called time. Tick, 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 time. Okay? Some people do well with time. Some people can get a lot done with their time. And so what we're looking at today, we're going to talk about time management. That's not a very spiritual-sounding word, but it's very important. I was talking a while ago with a young man, and we were talking about it. One time in my life, I was a youth director at a church, their youth director with 25 kids in the youth group. I was a contractor with two or three people working for me. One time I had seven guys working for me doing hotels while I was going full-time to college and while I was married and had a child on the way. And I told him, I said, if I would have continued in that kind of business, and it was all productive and it was all good, if I'd continued that more than the years I had to college, I knew it was going to come to an end when college ended. I wouldn't be married today. But fortunately, because I set my priorities right, then I have 39 years of marriage, but I knew somewhere down the line if I kept up that pace, something was going to break. And you know, all of us are like that guitar thing. Now, that guitar I was playing, a guitar thing, yeah. That's why I'm not very good at it. I keep calling it a thing, yeah. You know, the thing won't get well. They told me if I quit picking at it, it'd finally get well. But if you laugh at my corny jokes, it moves on a lot faster, folks. I'm just telling you. You can pick your friends, you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose. You probably remember that, yeah. All these wonderful things from the hippy-dippy days of the 70s. Yeah. Matthew, you liked that one, didn't you? Come on, just admit it. You liked it. No. Your dad's saying, don't encourage him, son, and he'll never get to the text today. All right. But the purpose, just like that guitar string, the last little string on the end is an E string. The big string's an E and the bottom one's an E. And that's the one that normally breaks because it's the thinnest one on there. People talk about stress today as if we're supposed to have no stress at all. And I'm telling you, God planned it. He incorporated into His plan for us to have stress. But there's good stress and there's bad stress. If you woke up next week and had nothing to do all week long, it's not going to be a very good week for you. How many of you already, you've had fun over the holiday season, it's been 2 weeks, but you're about ready to get back to work, back ready to get to... Carolyn's going, you liar! I can do this forever right now. Maybe if you're a teacher, you would like more than 2 weeks. But most people I'm talking to, I talked to a man yesterday, he said, I'm tired of Chex Mix. I'm tired of pecan pie. I'm not going to eat any more turkey or ham. I'm ready to get back to some kind of ordered life than just hanging around watching football, eating stuff all the time. Now, if I hear the crickets right now, I really worry about you guys. Don't some of you really in your heart of hearts want to do something a little more productive than sitting around eating the holiday stuff, watching football games over and over again? I mean, that's good for a while. So there's a good kind of stress that we have in our life. Having a planned, orderly life is good, but there's a bad kind of stress. I can take that guitar and I can turn that tuner on it, and If it's right now, it's tune. I hit certain keys and I get but if this breaks, it's going to cut your head off. Okay, just now listen to it. Uh-oh. Too much stress to make music. But if I laid it all the way down, then it would have not enough stress to do music either. So there's good stress and bad stress. You're supposed to have stress in your life. Please don't let psychologists or psychobabble tell you that your chore in life is try to eliminate all stress. Sometimes getting up for a stressful situation that's productive. You think these boys that play these football games, these college games and pro games, you think they're not cranked up? You think they're not a little insecure as they go out there on the field? Don't you think they're shaking just a little bit as they're getting ready? Then they kind of settle down and start playing. But they never just lay down on the field in the fourth quarter. Well, the Cowboys lay down on the field in the fourth quarter, you know, except for Whitten. He's the only guy holding the team together, I think. Anyway, that's just me. Yeah. You notice on one of my little gizmos here, one day I'll have enough time. No timeouts left, clock running down. Looks like the Cowboys lose another one. You notice that little foot thing I put on there? Those guys are so disappointing. Okay, anyway, the point is they don't lay down the fourth quarter and go to sleep, do they? No, they're paid to keep up that momentum, keep up that stress, if you will, even though their bodies are exhausted and bruised up. And so please don't let anybody tell you that, you know, my life just doesn't feel right because I have things to do, places to go. You're supposed to have a certain amount of stress. But there's good stress. So the purpose of time management is not that we can cram more into our schedule, but to kind of defrag and rearrange our life to take away the wrong kind of stress and to give back quality. Oddly enough, you end up with more free time than you had before. Would you be interested in that? Anybody here be interested in that? So we're going to kind of take 2 weeks and talk about this, and next week we'll have part of what we call a share time, and we'll have you interject on where you might think that you have use time wisely or unwisely. So the first thing about time management is planning. If you wake up Monday morning and you're trying to cook breakfast, but you can't find everything because you didn't clean the kitchen the night before, and you need that shirt to put on, but it's not ironed when you could have ironed it the night before. So you start off Monday morning. Some of you are going to do this. You're going to start off Monday morning, and you're going to be late one more time because it is your thing to be late to everything. You can't, you know, there's a certain, psychologists say there's a certain kind of high that takes place when people have to rush to get ready, even though they're 5 or 10 minutes late and make the whole group suffer as a result. They get a certain high out of scrambling to get that all done. You know what would be a better plan? It'd be better, as one lady told me, and I learned this years ago, never go to bed at night with a messy kitchen. Never go to bed at night with a messy kitchen. You wake up the next morning, there's the coffee, everything's set, and so I've learned to do that. That's my job, is to do the kitchen. So I try to do that every time. But I'm not always perfect at it, but pretty much perfect at it. It's nice to walk in the morning. No dirt, nothing's on the floor, everything's arranged, and if I got to cook that morning, it's ready to go. I don't go dig out of the closet and try to find a shirt and have it ironed on Monday morning while I'm trying to get ready and the guys come pick me up for work or whatever. You know? Iron that shirt the night before. Come on. And what's going to happen to you on Monday as you go down the road? Instead of being frustrated at traffic, you're going to go, I had the kitchen clean, so I was ready for breakfast, had my shirt already laid out, my socks and everything all ready to go. Now, you've seen people that push that too far. They've got all their socks rolled up in the drawer, the certain colors this way, and you go into that kind of house, you're going to go, something's wrong with them. They're a little too neat. Some people are a little too neat. I don't mind if somebody's over-neat. I just don't like them whining at me because I'm not perfectionistic like they are. We're not talking about perfectionism. We're talking about planning some things out. You see, Jesus, John said, let's go to John chapter 7. Look at a couple of passages there in John chapter 7. And see something remarkable about Jesus. Could you imagine having as much to do as Jesus needed to do in that 3.5 years of ministry, knowing that he was going to go to the cross? He had a calm demeanor about him. He could totally focus on one person at a time. You know, Jesus didn't talk to somebody and then at the same time go, oh, excuse me, Jason, I got to check my cell phone. Have you ever talked to somebody and they're checking this and they're checking that and they're looking at that the whole time? And you might as well not be talking to him. I've got a relative like this. I love to see him on the holidays, but I've really never seen him in my entire life. He's always making another business deal, very rich person, and he's got that all going, and you never have him. We take walks in the park together, and I can say something to him, and if I could turn around to him at any moment and say, tell me what I just said, he wouldn't have a clue. Because his little BB is up too high. His string is a little too tight. And he thinks, he calls it multitasking. I call it a wasted life. He called it multitasking. I called it a wasted life. Tell you what, when you sit down and talk to me over coffee, I'm not playing with a cell phone. I'm not playing. I'm looking over your shoulder watching the football game. The TV goes off. When you get me, you got all of it, whether you want all me or not. You got the whole enchilada. And no, I'm just so big. I don't know. I mean, what did we do before we had cell phones? How did we live? It wasn't until I got a cell phone that that's when I realized I'm a really important person. Oh, wait, I gotta check that. Queen of England needs me right now. No, she don't. You can live without it. Come on. And then we whine about people. It's all about planning. Planning is crucial. I should put that somewhere. Planning is crucial to not wasting time and being distracted by worthless activities. John 7:6. So Jesus said to them, "My time is not yet here, but your time is always opportune." So Jesus always had this concept of living his life and being the incarnate Son of God walking on earth. He volunteered to put himself under the constraints of this commodity called time. And he knew there was a timely thing to do. Just as there's many verses in Proverbs that talk about not to open your mouth all the time and talk all the time, there's just as many verses in Proverbs and Ephesians 4 that talk about speaking a timely word at just the right time. Just pulling one lever and say, "I'm just not going to talk as much, and that'll fix all problems, and it'll be wisdom." That don't give you wisdom. Sometimes you need to speak a word at just the right time, and you also need to not talk as much sometimes. Okay? So it's all about this. Jesus had this constant attitude, "My time is not yet, but your time is always opportune." He was always very aware that he was on the clock, but he wasn't distracted. He had so much to do, and yet he carried that about with such calm that we wonder it would drive anybody else crazy. Look at John chapter 9, 1 through 5. As he passed by, he saw a blind man from birth. His disciples said, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents?" They were born blind. Jesus said, "It's neither this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so the works of God might be displayed. We must work," listen to this, "we must work the works of him who sent us as long as it is day. Night is coming, and no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world." So you can almost hear the clock ticking in the back of his mind, thinking, "I've got a certain amount of time to carry these things out." Now, you guys don't have that restriction on time. When I leave, you're going to be here. I'm going to send the Holy Spirit, and you'll be my hands and feet and my voice for me. And that's how the church is going to be, just like we are. Okay? But that sense of mission. Look at John 17, verse 4. At the end of his life, shortly before his execution, this is the real Lord's Prayer. This is the one that only the Lord could pray himself. John 17, verse 4 said, "I glorified you on the earth, having accomplished the work which you've given me to do." So Jesus was definitely focused. He wasn't rushed, but he clearly knew that he was on a mission. How many of you understand that since you have a life that's been given to you from the Lord, that you're on a mission? How many of you still sense that sense of mission? Now, sometimes when we're in an organization and we have external stimuli to keep us on focus, like when I was in college, it's very clear that here's the test you do, here's the final that you do, here's freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, senior year, and it was all clear cut for you. When you're in the military, they even tell you how to tie your shoes there. That's why some military people, after they retire after 20 years and they're only like 40 years old, they really have a tough time in this fluid-run world, because it doesn't run like the military out here with the civilians. And these silly civilians just go by their next whim, it seems like. It can be a very confusing, frightening world for a seasoned 20-year vet going out of the Air Force, Army, Marines, or whatever, when he gets into this world where everything's not regulated with a number and a code. Okay? They have difficulty with it. You know what they have difficulty with? They have difficulty with the best way to spend their time. It's all been told them how to do it before. A code book thicker than this tells you how to handle and appropriate your time. When you're in school as a school teacher, you have a certain thing that you set up for the students. I hope y'all, you two girls, seem like y'all want to just hang around and do Christmas again, but I know we don't care. You have a schedule that you lay out for those kids. I guarantee you, whether you're a youth director or whatever, if you don't have a plan for them, They can smell fear. And they can look up at the teacher and go, they don't really have a plan today. We can take them, I think. If we all push together, we can take them. How many of you teachers felt overwhelmed like that? You were a little weak in your scheduling that week, and the kids can see that fear in your eyes, and then they come upon you like fire ants on a summer day. They come after you. Yeah. That's what happens. So planning, but the second thing is, it's important to extract the precious from the worthless, the precious from the worthless. You need to set priorities. And I put there, find the precious. I didn't think about this. I wrote this a long time ago. When I said, find the precious, now I'm thinking of the Lord of the Rings movie. My precious! I knew y'all were going to think that. I'm not thinking the Lord of the Rings movie, but you do need to find the precious. There's a test. There's a great book you may need to buy for yourself. It's called The Lies We Believe by Dr. Chris Thurman. He gives a test of about 31 questions at the start of the book. And when you give the test, you don't tell the people how the test is supposed to come out. On one side, you can put one, like I totally agree. Number five, I don't agree at all with that statement. And he gives these 31 questions. Well, every one of those questions are complete lies. But every time I give it to a youth group, that I've ever given it to young people, they always, on question number six, answer the same way. Question, the lie number six is, you can have it all. And to the man, to the woman in a youth group, every one of them believes, they've been taught this by TV and the media, that you can have it all. But you really can't. Now think about this. The show I used to like, it was on, it's in syndication now, but The Cosby Show, where they're in the apartment, and he has a job being a full-time doctor, a pediatrician, I guess, because he delivered a baby. The wife has a full-time job being a... Okay, do lawyers and doctors work 40-hour weeks? What do they work? Maybe 60, sometimes 80. But none of them work under 50. I've never met a doctor, unless he was getting toward retirement or something. I've never met a doctor and a lawyer, and I know a few. They don't work 40-hour weeks. So, here's this family. They have four kids, right? There's three or four kids in there, right? They have the perfect relationship with their children. How do you develop relationships with your children? Hey, it takes time to play with the caterpillar. It takes time to push the swing. It takes time to play as we used to play with our kids. I'd lay them on the back and flip them up. We called our family the Zucchini Brothers. They really thought we were, they thought we were gypsies out of Transylvania. I always told them that. But we did. We always had this circus thing. My kids really thought we were all going to be a circus kid. So we called the Flying Zucchini Brothers and then sisters because we had Angela. But it takes time to play flying zucchini in the floor, you know. It takes time to do those things. So here you got the Cosby Show. You got a full-time lawyer, a full-time doctor. They have the most wonderful house, the most expensive apartment in New York or Brooklyn or wherever the show's put out from. And they have this wonderful relationship with their kids. And you know what the truth of it is? Can that kind of family actually exist in real life? No. No. You don't like that I just said no, did you? You didn't like that, so I got so quiet. Because still deep down, we've been told that we can have it all. You cannot have a rich family life and both people working 60-plus hours and kind of bringing it together and hoping something happens. We drove through Plano one time, and a kid riding in the car to a youth conference looked up and he said, I'll never own a house like that. I said, yeah, that particular house is about $450,000. The one next to it is $500,000 or more. I said, I used to build houses, so I said, that one's a two-story. And I said, those people have it made. I said, you're wrong, son. I said, you've got it made because you have parents that spend time with you. I know you live in a mobile home, okay? A mobile home. A home that can go somewhere, but we never travel in it, you know? That's another movie, but anyway. A guy was trying to explain to an alien where he lives. Said, I live in a mobile home. He said, yes. He said, where do you go? He says, we never go anywhere. So you live in a mobile home, but you don't go anywhere. Right, exactly. I'll explain it to you later. As we're going to look at those houses in Plano, he said, those people have it made. I want to be rich like that. I want to have a house like that. I said, let me tell you what's happening in that house right there. These people live at 6 in the morning, and they dump their kids off at a daycare, okay? And then they're shuttled off to school. This is worse than the old Roman Empire, taking a kid at 6 years old and making him a soldier. Parents never see him anymore. I said, these people do not get home at night till 8 or 8:30 at night. They scream and holler at each other. The kids don't know the parents. The parents don't know the kids. The kids are shuffled off every summer to a summer camp because the parents can't stand them, and they don't know the kids. And these are rich kids. These are rich kids. These are kids that would love to trade one day with you where your dad and mom give you their full attention. No cell phones going, no TV in the background. totally locked in on you. They would change anything with you. He said, I was sadly mistaken. I said, now I'm not saying every house like that is here. But I know I could go through on any day of the week and rob these people blind because there's nobody there from 6 to 8:30 at night. I said, you can't have it all. You have to pick. You have to prioritize. You have to decide what is precious and what's worthless. What's precious and what's worthless. Okay? Another fella I knew that was our associate pastor, he came and said, he was going to Multnomah Bible College. He said, I just love one of my professors. He said, he's the kind of man I want to be. I said, what do you like so much about him? Not only is he teaching the Bible and is a professor at our school, I think he just had his master's. I don't think he had his doctorate. But, you know, he was teaching these kids working on their bachelor's. He said, not only is he a great Bible teacher, but the guy's a full-time lawyer. And so he gets to be on TV sometimes, and he gets to have a real input with the world. And he's got a great family and a couple of kids. I said, wow, that guy sounds pretty busy. He said, and not only that, he gets to travel to Europe and do all that. And I said, you know, this guy's named Dave. I said, Dave, if he's doing that much stuff, something's going to crack over time. And it wasn't a year later, he came back, and he said, well, guess what? I said, what? Old Dr. So-and-so, or Mr. So-and-so, who taught at our school, he ran around on his wife, and he did that. I said, do you think he's a terrible person because he ran around on his wife? Well, yeah, he was fake the whole time. I said, no, he wasn't fake the whole time. He wasn't hypocritical the whole time. He needed a way of release, and he decided to do it with lust. He could have just as well done it with drugs or something else. Now, isn't it odd that I'm sitting here not thinking the guy's that terrible, and you think he's horrible? And I said, he did do the wrong thing. But you can't keep doing that and keep pushing that without something blowing up. And he decided the one place that he could slack off and let go was his marriage. And now what's he got? He's going to do everything alone. He's going to retire without anybody if he retires at all. He lost his job teaching at the school. That was appropriate. That was right. He was unrepentant about his situation and didn't want to change anything because he didn't separate what was precious from what was worthless. There's not enough time, in other words, to do it all. See, life is not supposed to be a string of meaningless activities, although like the person that scrambles out on Monday morning late for everything because they didn't clean up the kitchen before or iron the shirt the night before, there's a certain high that you get by just continually doing meaningless activities. So you have to prioritize. Some things are precious, some things are worthless. Now, everybody here, except our visitors, have heard this story 16,000 times. But one time when I was young and strong and better looking than I am now, not that that has anything to do with the story, I climbed Mount Rainier, which is 14,441 feet tall. You start at the 7,000-foot level. I went up with a soldier. We're tied together with all the stuff. We have the ice axes, crampons to put on your feet. You start at 7,000. You go up that afternoon. You start early in the morning. You go up that afternoon at 10,000 feet. You sleep overnight in a cave. You wake up at 3 in the morning, put a miner's hat on, and you go up through the really steep stuff and the dangerous stuff. As we're going up from the 7,000-foot level to the 10,000-foot level, we both had 60-pound packs on. He was used to carrying a backpack. I wasn't. They were really nice. We got up there, so the next day he said, I just got to tell you, I've got pretty far. I've never got to go to the top, but I got to go further than you've gone. So tomorrow, when we wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning, it's not a kid's game. People die, about 3 or 4 people die on Mount Rainier every year. It's not a game. It's dangerous. I said, okay. And, of course, the question is, why don't you climb in the first place? You had a family. Because it was there. I mean, you don't have to explain it, you know, because it was there. So me and this guy, about 10 years my junior, are going to go for the base camp. And we're in the cave. And he said, now, listen, tomorrow when we wake up, you got to be careful with everything we do. We're going to walk over ice and snow, but also just raw red rocks. And those really slip with those crampons on. Sometimes we have to take the crampons off, put them back on. It's dangerous. We're going to have to go across a crevasse that they put a ladder over, and you can't see the bottom of the crevasse. And he said, so just please be careful. We're going to have to cross several places that are 30-foot spans, and there's no bottom to those things as far as we know. I mean, it just gets white, blue, green, black. It's spooky when you go over. So it was getting really dangerous. I said, okay, how do we need to prepare for tomorrow? Because I had knives. I had first aid kits and everything. He pulled out of his backpack, a little bitty backpack. He said, this is what we're taking tomorrow. I said, yeah, and I'll carry mine. I said, no, you don't. I didn't make it clear to you what mountain climbing is about. The higher up you go, the less stuff you get to take with you. I said, but I don't like that. You said it's the most dangerous part of the trip. Yeah, it's hands and knees stuff. It's dangerous stuff. It's going to chill you to the bone sometimes, not because of the cold, but just because you're going like, what am I doing here? This is really dangerous. He said, did I not tell you that the further you go up the mountain, the less you get to take with you? So we dumped those two big backpacks. He took a little knapsack, took some Spam and some sandwiches, a bunch of water, some kind of map and a compass thing. We had a couple of military knives. That was it. I said, this really bothers me that the most dangerous part of the trip, we have to take the least stuff with us. He said, that's how all of life is, isn't it? The further up you go, you have to start making some choices. You have to start weeding out what's really precious and what is really worthless. And there's people that do not refuse until they're forced by circumstances to make those kind of choices. We really believe, I can have it all. I can have it all. I'm going to kind of cling to it all. If I'd carried a 60-pound pack up, there were places it took everything I could do to crawl from here to crawl to here. And I went, wow, that plus 60 pounds. I was strong at the time, but I couldn't have done it, could not have done it. And that's just a principle we need to learn. We need to learn to say no sometimes to worthless things. I know you're supposed to help other people try to come to the Lord, and you have an obligation to witness. Witnessing, by the way, is not some optional thing. It's an actual command. Did you know that? It's not go witness if you want to. Kind of work that into your life. Go into all the world and be witnesses. Understand that. But there's some people in your life, and some of them you met over the holidays, what I call toxic friends and toxic relatives. Sometimes those toxic relatives, when you should be spending time walking with your husband, talking with your wife, talking with your kids, that mother-in-law calls on the phone, and she's going to talk to you on the hour, an hour on the phone, and gripe about the same thing she's been griping about for 20 years. And you know what? As a Christian, you are not obligated to sit there and burn a whole hour listening to that dumb mother-in-law gripe about things she don't plan to change, ever going to plan. You have some toxic friends that get in touch with you and everything else. And after a while, you're going, what? You know what? After leaving that person, I feel worse. After leaving that person, I feel drugged down. You don't have to go and waste your life with people that, man, like somebody put on Facebook, it's time to realize there's some people that you walk across broken glass for, and they wouldn't walk across the street for you. Sometimes it's okay as a Christian to say, hey, I'm not obligated to spend all my life with everybody and save everybody. If the fruit ain't ready to pick, don't bother with it. And you have some relatives that you need to kind of cut off and say, look, hey, you're going to go another hour and just whine and gripe, and I've already told you what the solution is in Christ. I'm not doing this anymore. How many of you have had to cut off some toxic friends and toxic relatives? And the whole time you're doing it, you're feeling guilty as a dog because you're a Christian. You're supposed to love everybody. Da, da, da. You don't see Jesus chasing people down. Did he chase down the rich young ruler when he walked away sad? I'm sure the disciples are going, finally, somebody with some money who's a pretty good moral person, and you let the people walk. You let the guy walk. Jesus didn't chase him down because he wasn't ready. The guy was, what, toxic. It wasn't time. Okay, we're going to have to close this out today. The third part on your paper there on page 2, as disciples of Jesus, it's essential to think about how we allocate our time. As one man said, money comes and goes. Time only comes by once. It's important, we'll finish with this one, it's important to separate what's important and what's urgent. The urgent things tend to absorb our time, so there's none left for the important. If you have no concept of most important versus less important, the urgent will manipulate your life. It will seem urgent, but what's really important? Now, I define there what urgent things are. When we feel urgent things are those things we feel like have to be done at that moment. Not because they're truly urgent, but because we get stirred up emotionally about it at the moment. Later on reflection, we see we missed a great opportunity if only we had the opportunity, only had established a set of priorities before the emotions took over. Terry, real quickly, if you would just summarize Luke 10, 38 through 42, the story of Mary and Martha. You don't read it. You don't get to read it now. I just know that, you know. What was the deal there? Mary and Martha were sisters.
Thank you.
Okay? And at that moment, Mary, he said, Mary chose the better part in this particular situation. This was a rare, unique situation. She set her priorities right. She sat and listened. And, you know, there's always time to clean dishes. There's always time to make another meal. Now, you have to be careful because I remember at seminary, they were building the library at Southwestern Seminary when I was there, the biggest theological library in the entire world. Well, they hired a bunch of guys from Southwestern to do it. I didn't need to do it because I was a contractor down in Maypearl, so I didn't need to do it. But one of the contractors came to our professor, a Scottish professor, teaching us the book of Romans. He said, boys, I got some of you in this class. Y'all work for the contractors here building our library? A couple of hands went up. He said, the contractor came to him the other day, and he said, I asked him, how do you like these seminary boys working for you? He said, they're really good, but they're robbing me. He said, really? They're stealing your tools and stuff? Like, he said, no. He said, I can leave my tools and everything out. These boys wouldn't steal anything. Where these boys steal from me is time. Well, they're supposed to be putting that rebar together and getting that thing going. They're over there talking theology and thinking because they're talking about God that somehow that eventually they're cheating me. So even on the other hand, you have Mary chose the better part. You got to be careful about the other way. When I'm at work or working for a contractor, concrete or whatever people I used to work for, I may talk to them at break time, before work, after work, but when it's time to get the work done, or nobody's going to listen to anything coming out of your mouth. So that's the converse side of that thing. Let's go now and go ahead and go to the end of your paper. And this is something I want you to fill out and do from next time. This is actually the application number two. Remember under number two, we said we need to extract the precious from the worthless. There's an action step on page four that is the application of number two, what's worthless and what's precious. And the first one says, make a list of about five things you look back on as precious. Maybe just for the year. Maybe for your whole life. And then make a list of about five things you look back on as worthless. Everybody understand? Okay? Everybody's paper will be checked and graded. No, it won't. But if you would go home and do this afternoon or sometime this week, that's from number two on this paper. And we'll do more about this next, but I'd like you to make a list of about five things you look back on that are precious and you're glad you involved your time in, or you wish you would have involved your time in, and make a list of about five things you look back on that the time you spent there was just worthless. This is important stuff, folks. We're finishing today. That's all I want to teach on today. This is an important thing. There's some great passages to look at. I'd like you to read all of those passages before next week. That's your assignment, because time does keep on slipping into the future, and money comes and goes, but time only comes around one time. It's important how you use your time. We've got a brand new year. We're thinking about new resolutions. We're thinking about doing things in a different way. You need to really realize that we've been given this commodity, this precious gift called time, and we need to make the most of it. It doesn't mean we need to be in a dog hurry all the time. It doesn't mean you need to be a little hyper person like I am. I'm like a squirrel on steroids, you know. This isn't about personality types. This has nothing to do with personality types. This teaching is about the urgency of making precious that time you have. Some of the most precious times are sitting around talking to a child, pushing a swing, uninterrupted, not looking at the cell phone, not looking at anything else. That, see, is just as important as making that business deal or getting that your teaching material ready for Monday, those kind of things. So I'm not talking about if you use time wisely, you're going to be cramming in as much as possible. That's not what we're talking about today. Some of you need to slow down. You need to slow down because you're going to pay with your health. You're going to pay with your health. Man, right when them grandkids are getting up knowing grandpa and grandpa, too late. Grandpa and grandma are just starting into their 60s. Grandpa's so dead, so sick, he's not going to make it. He's so stressed out. He took care of his body so poorly. Grandkids are going to, yeah, when I was 3 or 4, I had a grandpa. Yeah, he's dead now. What'd he do? Oh, he thought he could have it all, and he thought everything was urgent. He didn't know what was precious and what was worthless. So let me show you some pictures of grandpa here. Let me show you some pictures of grandma here. Yeah. That doing you any good, kid? That doesn't do those kids any good, does it? What are you going to do with time this year? What are you going to do with time?
Thank you for listening. We pray this message helps you grow in grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ. You may contact us through our website, teaguebiblechurch.org, T-E-A-G-U-E, biblechurch.org, or our mailing address is P.O. Box 827, Teague, Texas, 75860.